Well, good morning, good people. Welcome to Word and Life's inaugural Zoom presentation. We're missing our usual hugs and greetings, and especially missing that bountiful hospitality table. But thanks to the Zoom platform, we are still able to have our May session. Dr. Rico and his new book, Triggers, seems to have synchronistically appeared at the right time. We've all been triggered by this pandemic situation. We're collectively triggered. And this study will show us the tools we need to keep our balance in this new world. I just gave you the background of Word and Life. We're not going to do that again. But welcome anyway. All of you who are different, who are new to Word and Life, we welcome you. All of us are here in awe of Dr. Rico's insights and his ability to prolifically write and to speak in such a meaningful way. Internationally known and admired, he's a PhD, an MFT, a psychotherapist, a teacher, a workshop leader, and writer who works in Santa Barbara and San Francisco. He combines Jungian, poetic, and mythic perspectives in his work with the intention of integrating the psychological and spiritual. His books and workshops include attention to Buddhist practices. Our morning will loosely follow this little schedule. Dave will speak and answer questions till about 11. We'll have breakout rooms then until 11:20. After 11:20, we'll have a 5-minute stand up and stretch, and 11:20 back for questions, and then ending at 11:45. So we are now in the capable hands of Dr. Tim Burnett, who's the founder and the curator of this amazing Way Collective. If you haven't gone on to that, you have to join the Way Collective. He will handle the Zoom, all the control panels, in a seamless way. And I am so grateful for Dr. Tim Burnett right now. Thanks, Tim. You're off.
Oh, I just said no problem. I did a little hand.
Okay.
Thanks
and
for having me.
Do you want to mention your website? I want to look it up myself. Is it webcollective.com?
Waycollective.org or .com. We'll both take you there. Yeah.
Waycollective.
Yeah.
Way. W-A-Y.
You got it.
Okay.
Thanks for having me, everyone. It's always fun to be with Word and Life. I love it.
You are appreciated.
Should I begin? Are you all set, Judith? Did you have anything else to say?
No, I'm good. You're on.
Okay, thank you. Well, first of all, welcome everyone. And really, it's really wonderful to see you in this way, at least. And I appreciate being asked to give this class, and I'm glad you're all together with me. As you know, our topic will be triggers and is based on my book, which is called, Triggers, How We Can Stop Reacting and Start Healing. And I thought I would begin with the origin of the book. Where did I get this idea? And I had just finished my other book, The Five Longings, and I asked myself, what is the word that you hear most from clients or even from students? And the answer came very easily. It was triggers. Somebody will say, I was triggered by what my wife did. I was triggered by what my boss did. I was triggered by what my husband did. And I thought to myself, well, it really would be good to look into what triggers are about and how to work with them so they don't destabilize us. And, of course, I noticed many triggers in my own life. And I thought, it must be that everybody is somehow affected by triggering events, also called pushing your buttons. So that's how the book came into being. And I thought I would begin with just reading, and I'll always say what page I'm on. I'm on page 1 for those of you who have the book. And this is the introduction. So I just want to read a paragraph or two to get us started. Someone says something to us, and we are suddenly struck with a sinking feeling in our stomach. Someone does something, and instantly we become enraged or alarmed. Someone comes at us with a certain attitude, and we go to pieces. We hear a mention of a person, place, or thing that is associated with an unresolved issue or past trauma, and we feel ourselves seize up with sadness, anger, fear, or shame. When any of this happens, a trigger has been pulled. We find ourselves in a stimulus-response experience, and it happens to all of us. A trigger is any word, person, event, or experience that touches off an immediate reaction. And this reaction can be sadness, depression, anger, fear, panic, shame, humiliation, losing face. Words takes the form of words, behavior, attitudes, events. Even the presence of certain people can incite a reflex in us over which we have no control. And of course, the way we use the word triggers is usually negative, and so that's what I'll be concentrating on. But I do want to acknowledge that there are also positive triggers. I'm now on page 5, third paragraph. A trigger, of course, can be positive, a stimulus that arouses joy, erotic excitement, optimism. For instance, we are triggered with chills and a lump in our throat when our team scores a win, or when we see an example of the triumph of the human spirit. A photo of happy times gone by might trigger a warm sense of nostalgia. We are triggered when we experience love at first sight or feel the magic of a kiss. But today we use the word trigger mostly to refer to what is disturbing and unpleasant. So our topic in this book is that negative triggering. The first thing I noticed, and the most important thing, which is why the subtitle is how to stop reacting, instead of saying how to stop reacting and start responding, a response is not out of your control. I changed it to how to start healing because of my central realization, which you will see throughout this book. And I summarized it in a very brief form by saying that, and I'm on the bottom of page 6, so this sentence summarizes the main point. Our goal is not to root out, get rid of, all our triggers, but to find a trailhead from them into the psychological and spiritual work that has been so long awaiting us. This is how we turn our triggers into tools. Or another way of saying it is, you can look at the triggers that happen to you the most and that are the strongest. The strongest triggers are the ones that incite a reaction that really bothers you, lasts for a long time, seems bigger than what is warranted by the original event, And most of all, reminds you of something that happens either in your childhood or in recent relationships. In that sense, the trigger is re-stimulating an old trauma that has still not been laid to rest. In other words, it's a trigger reaction is a post-traumatic stress reaction. That was my central realization when I started working on this topic. So that's why it says stop reacting and start healing, because what you're now being offered through a trigger, imagine this, that a trigger is an opportunity rather than an assault, that you are being given the option of looking back at a trauma and working toward a healing of it. And of course that you would do mainly in therapy, but I'm giving practices in the book that also help you get there, in keeping with the whole idea of self-help. We're triggered the most by something that we haven't worked through fully. And the trigger gives us the opportunity to look at it, inquire into it, and start the process whereby we could let it go. And I'll be showing how to do that in the course of the book. So that's my overall introduction, and I was really excited when I had this realization about how it connects to the past. So I'd like to give an example, and a very simple one. Let's say you notice that you are strongly affected by the possibility or the experience of displeasing either someone in authority or a man or a woman. You notice that whenever you displease a man, you start having a fear that he's going to come at you aggressively. Or if you displease the boss or any authority figure, something terrible will happen to you. What you can trace that back to is how in early life it could be that when you displeased your father, he came at you with some humiliating statements or even hit you. So the limbic system in your brain, the primitive part of our brain, has recorded the connection, like in a Pavlov's dog experiment, has kept the connection between displeasing a man or an authority figure with the possibility of being hurt or abused. And when this happens, you just automatically have that fear. You can't talk yourself out of it. The prefrontal cortex that works on logic and intelligence assessment that would tell you, no, this man, this boss, is not going to hit me the way my dad did. That doesn't work. You can't just, the part of your brain that has recorded it doesn't listen to those kind of statements. It's offline. It's just gone into panic mode. What made this connection? It's the trigger. In that sense, the one who triggered us is giving us an opportunity to do some work on ourselves. So let me just check in now for questions, because I don't want to go too far before I want to be sure that everybody's kind of on the same page with this. So does anybody have a question so far?
Again, if you have one, you're welcome to message in the chat, me personally in a private chat or in the public one, or try to do the hand-raising feature.
Which you will find in when you go to participants at the bottom, and then it'll open up a screen on the right, and that's where you choose hand-raising. Okay, it seems like we don't have questions on this part, so let's go on. Examples of triggers. Let's take a look at these, because I think we can all relate to them. Now, everyone has unique trigger points. Some triggers are only happening in you, but there are others that most of these just happen to everyone. So now I'm on page 11. Some of us are triggered when people come at us with strong feelings of any kind. For instance, somebody gets angry at you, and it's just normal to be triggered into an alert, alarmed kind of reaction. And that would just be true of anybody. So you don't want to put yourself down for having a feeling like that. It just goes with the territory of human interaction, because sometimes dangerous things do happen when people get upset with us. Another example would be a sudden loss. You hear that someone dies, or you hear that you've lost out on something that was important to you. And so you have kind of a stab of grief. An example would be bad news. You could also be triggered when a natural disaster occurs, such as this COVID virus reality that we're all facing at the moment. Somebody is acting violently, out of control. Some person, place, or thing reminds you of a terrible distress that happened to you. Books, movies, songs could evoke feelings, arouse certain memories, give you an insight, motivate some type of a change in you, set some type of a mood, and any of these you might find disturbing. And of course, there's the obvious trigger that leads to going to an addiction, like, this happens, so I've got to have a cigarette. This happens, so I have to take a drink. And basically what's occurring is the trigger is pushing you into a way of acting that you're disturbed by or you're not very proud of. And when we have our breakout rooms, you'll be able to talk about some specific triggers that you've noticed in yourself. Now, one of the things I've noticed about some triggers is that they tend to destabilize me. Let me explain what I mean by that. You suddenly have the feeling that everything's falling apart and that you'll have no control over what may happen next. you're triggered into a kind of panic or loss of a sense that you have any inner resources. So one of the main ways that we work with triggers is to build our resources so that when these triggers come along, we're going to have a way of dealing with them. I was giving a class once a number of years ago, and I don't remember what I was talking about, but there was a kindergarten teacher in the class, and she gave this comment, which I've always remembered, and I thought to myself, this is really, really important. She said, I had the experience yesterday in my kindergarten class that a little boy hit a little girl, and I immediately went over and separated them, and I said to the little boy, why did you hit Susie? And he said, because she took my colored pencils. So I, kindergarten teacher, so I said to Jimmy, you have words for that. You don't have to hit. You can speak up and say, you took my pencils, give them back. If she won't give them back, you can ask me to intervene, or whatever word a child would understand for intervene. And I thought to myself, this is the answer to finding inner resources. Instead of going to the most primitive reaction, which often happens with a trigger, he was triggered by the fact that she took something that belonged to him. I get that. Anybody would be triggered by it. But he went to the most primitive option, which is to hit someone, to try to teach someone that you can't get away with taking anything from me. This is what will happen to you. And he was probably doing what was done to him in his household by one of his own parents or brothers or sisters. And the teacher was saying, wait a minute, there are other options. There are other ways of handling this. That's what I call having inner resources. And so a big part of our class and of the book, about half of the book, is on how to build the resources that give you more options than just the immediate reaction. So when I gave you that list of the various ways that you could be triggered, and I said you go into a panic, you go into anger, you go into sadness or shame, there are many other options besides that. It's hard to believe. You would think that I have no other options. It's just the natural reaction. And in a way, that's true. But you can also learn ways to allow that immediate primitive reaction just for a minute or two, and then go to your other possibilities. So, for instance, little Jimmy could stop before his hand landed on Susie and say to himself, wait a minute, I can ask Miss Jones to help me, or I can say something to Susie that will make a difference. Now we see the connection between resources and power, because a trigger disempowers you, seems to make you react in a certain way, although it's not actually doing that. It's just that your habitual style is to go in a certain direction. And as an alternative, you can find other options. I'd like to give one more example because this one helps you see that it isn't as if you're forced into just one reaction. And actually, this came up yesterday because I was working with a client, and this person is doing a project which he has told me is very new, very creative, and he wants to, you know, present it online and so forth. And yesterday he said that he found out that somebody else in another part of the country is doing the very same project and has already put it on social media. And he said, so I really feel envious that this other guy, you know, jumped in ahead of me. And so finding out that somebody else is doing something and is even being more successful than you believe you can be leads to envy as one of the responses to that trigger. But I opened up the option to him. Did you ever think of admiring him and making contact with him and collaborating with him, not thinking of him as a rival, but thinking of, not thinking of him as somebody you now have to compete with, but somebody that you can work with so that you both learn more? So if you oriented yours, now I'm not talking to him, I'm talking to everybody. If we oriented ourselves in a new direction, we would notice that our triggered reactions start to become healthier. So instead of reacting with envy, I can react with admiration. Instead of reacting with competition, I can react with collaboration. Instead of reacting with, oh darn, I waited too long, we can react with, oh good, somebody has started the ball rolling and maybe we can find a way to work together so the ball will keep rolling so that everybody can benefit. That style of thinking has a lot of spiritual dimension to it. And I'm bringing this up to show that as we continue in our course, I'll be bringing in the spiritual practices that help us. How is it spiritual to say, rather than envy, I would like to admire and collaborate? Because the spiritual means that somehow I have turned this ego reaction of competing with the guy in Chicago who's trying to do the same thing I'm doing and succeeding. You're letting go of ego and you're going to the place of integrity and caring about how all can benefit. Those are the three qualities of spirituality that stand out. I'm letting go of the ego charge that this has. I am acting with integrity rather than rivalry. And I am looking for a way to make what I'm doing a contribution to everyone. So it's letting go of ego, integrity, and loving kindness, understood in the Buddhist style of I show love to myself, to those I care about, and to everyone. This would be an example of how you find healing through the trigger. So I'll check in again on questions. Anybody have any questions or comments on what we're talking about?
Dave, I'll just ask briefly, you had said that the three stages there at the end was letting go of ego, and there was a second one in loving kindness. What was the second one?
Integrity.
Integrity.
I want to act with integrity.
Thank you.
Peggy, were you going to acknowledge Peggy? Did you have your hand up, Peggy?
I see that she just typed a question, so that we can probably just read and...
Okay. Well, why don't you unmute Peggy? I see her right here.
Okay, I'm looking for her myself.
Oh, I see. Only the host can unmute.
Yeah, I'm trying to do it.
It's
but you're going to have to also unmute Peggy. There you go.
I'm unmuted.
Here you are. You have been unmuted.
I am unmuted.
And you will remain that way for the rest of your life. No one will be pressing mute.
Everything you have said, I identify with. I'm sure we all do on a certain level. I think how do we control ourselves, if you will, so that we can respond in these ways that are good and these spiritual ways to triggers? Is it a skill that we practice?
Yes, it'll be a skill, and I'll be talking about it in the next chapter. So we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
But I can say this. It'll be like, you know, the taking a breath. Remember how they used to say, take a breath and count to 10 before you react?
Yes.
So you're going to take a breath. You're going to go to your mindful place.
Mm-hmm.
What I have heard referred to as the mindful pause, P-A-U-S-E.
Mm-hmm.
So what is a mindful pause? I am stopping the train on the track of fear, anger, and panic. And I am instead letting go of reactions and judgments and just being with this as it is. And that's called a mindful pause, but I'll talk about it more in detail next time.
Okay, thanks, Dave.
Thank you for bringing that up. I think John had a question.
Yeah, we've got a couple more rolling in here. John, do you want to ask... If I unmute you there, let's see. Okay, you got to unmute yourself. I just unmuted you. There you go.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, John.
So I noticed that when I'm in the moment of reacting to the trigger, which for me is usually a freeze response, as opposed to fight or flight. And I know that I'm doing that. And I try to take that moment of pause. I find myself just kind of stuck in the frozenness of the moment. And I don't really see a way out till later, after I've removed myself from that situation and I'm processing the experience. This typically happens for me, Dave, when I'm in the middle of a kind of an emergency situation at the cottage as a chaplain and trying to respond to the current situation. Something triggers me and I kind of get stuck in that frozenness. Is that something that we're going to be talking about going forward?
Yes, but also let's talk about it now. And by the way, John is a spiritual director at our local hospital. And so he's working with this kind of issue a lot, I guess. When you mentioned being frozen, could you say a little more about what you mean? Like, it's like deer in the headlights?
Yeah, it's a deer in the headlights kind of a thing. I was in a situation the other night with a mom that was distraught over her baby. She'd been up for 3 days. she only spoke Spanish, so I'm using an interpreter, which makes the conversation sometimes, as you know, a little difficult. And she just didn't have words. And so I decided to just be present with her, until the doctor could ask her to come back in. They were doing some procedures, Dave. And we sat there in the silence, which is, you know, is tough to do. And then at the very end, just before the doctor walked in, through the interpreter, she said, "Is there something that you want to say to me?" And there was, my answer to that immediately was yes and no. But I really struggled to find the words. And what I didn't find until later, when I realized that the trigger, when I identified the trigger that was going on in me, was the trigger of feeling helpless in a moment to help another human being. And the best thing that I could have done would have been to say, "I totally am feeling the helplessness that you're feeling right now," and connect with it at that level. But I didn't figure that out until an hour later when I'm sitting on my front porch away from the situation.
Yeah, and that fits with what I would recommend, which is to declare your own reality.
Okay.
"I find myself helpless right now in, you know, what I could say or do. And that's what you're feeling too. And so I really get it that this is a hard time for both of us."
Thank you.
So the alternative to the freezing is, first of all, to acknowledge what's happening in the moment and let it be totally okay. The fact that I'm feeling helpless is totally okay. Being a spiritual director, having the training that I have, does not mean that there won't be times when I will have nothing to offer except my presence with you. So I have nothing to offer now, but I can stay here with you.
Thanks, Dave. Looks like
what a beautiful thing that is to have. Imagine how beautiful it is to have someone say that to you. "Even though I don't have something to offer that would really make a difference, I will stay with you." There's something about hearing that that is so meaningful. I remember many years ago, it was just after Christmas, and I stopped in an Episcopal cathedral, and in the back there, in the lobby vestibule, they had a copy of a sermon that was given on Christmas Day by the dean of the cathedral, and I still remember word for word how the sermon ended. It was so beautiful and so meaningful. He said, speaking about Christmas, you know, Christ being born, "God not only came, he stayed." And I still remember that, and I was just triggered into a warm feeling. I thought to myself, what a beautiful offering. Not only came, but stayed. And to believe that there's a power, a greater power than ourselves, that stays with us. Something like what in my childhood was called the guardian angel. He's staying with us as we go through things. That sense of accompaniment goes with that 23rd Psalm. "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me." It doesn't say, I will fear no evil because you've given me an answer. I will fear no evil because you rescued me from the valley. All it says is, you stayed with me. Thou art with me. And there's something about offering that, that liberates us from that frozen state and helps the other. Okay.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Catherine is next, so I'm going to unmute Catherine here. And you have to unmute yourself too, Catherine, and then you should be good to go.
Okay, and I'm always looking for you when you ask a question.
So, is that... Were you doing Catherine Dean? Tim?
Yeah.
You got it.
Okay, all right. Well, it's Catherine and Michael. So this is Michael. And so my question, which I typed in, was so are all our, am I understanding you that all our triggers are rooted in childhood experiences?
No. There are three options, which we'll come to in a later chapter.
Okay.
And the first one is early life, but another one is ego. How dare he do this ahead of me? So that's an ego reaction. And the third is shadow, where you see someone do something and get away with it, and you know you're the same way, but you wouldn't dare do that because it wouldn't look good to your image. So those are the three of the many possibilities of what's up when we're triggered. Somebody else had a question, but I'll talk greatly in detail about that in a later class.
Yeah, our next question comes from Gail. So I'm looking for Gail. There you go. Gail, I'm going to unmute you, and you can unmute yourself, and you should be able to go.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
Excuse me one sec. Tim, are you able to tell me which page someone is on? Because now I'm on page 2. I don't see Gail. I'm going to page 3.
I see Gail on 2, but, you know, once she starts talking, it's likely that she'll pop up on your first page.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Okay, go ahead, Gail.
Okay. Dave, this goes back a few...
Oh, hi. Gail Campanelle.
Correct.
Hi.
Hi.
I didn't realize you were here. But go ahead, ask your question.
Thank you for being here. My question is, or my experience is, that it's difficult to identify the original trigger. It seems like that's critical in order to move on to healing. What is it that's really motivating me? And it's easy to say, well, you made me do this. Whatever I did that I'm not proud of, you made me do it. Now, I try to avoid blaming, but that's an easy out. And the other thing that I just wanted to throw in was that I came from a family where we were all Italian. We were all very verbal. We expressed ourselves often loudly about our displeasures. But in my adult life, I feel I had a wonderful childhood. So am I just avoiding facing certain things that are too uncomfortable to face from my childhood? There wasn't abuse or a lot of hitting or anything like that. Certainly a lot of yelling. But anyway, I wanted to throw out those issues that come up for me.
Well, first of all, don't let anybody take away your happy childhood. So,
thank you.
Yes, there are times when we obviously kind of gloss over some things that happened that weren't quite right for us. And the triggers help us get there. And I will be going into how to do this, but I can start us off by saying that you would ask yourself, is this familiar? And you go to that mother, picture of your mother in your mind. Father, brothers, sisters. Is there anything about the way they were toward me that is reminiscent of this trigger that is hitting me right now. And you won't always find it there in childhood. It could also be in past relationships of any kind. For instance, at school or with peers or with former partners. But I will also show that it could be ego or shadow, and I'll go into how that works. So bring that question up again after I've talked about it more in detail, if you still have the question. My checking in with her like that, I was genuinely caring that I answered Gail's question because it was important to me. And that's a way of showing that she's important. She could ask herself, as could I or any of us, did either of my parents have that level of caring about what I was wondering about or what I was feeling? I could ask myself that, all based on some triggering events. I'm thinking of a wonderful quote from a book by J.D. Salinger. I think it was Franny and Zooey. And he asked his father a question. The son asked the father a question. And then we read this sentence. My father turned to me as if he had been waiting his whole life to hear my question. Isn't that beautiful? And when I read that, I thought, oh, but my father never turned to me that way. I hope I've turned to my son that way. That's how you work with something that comes up and brings up a feeling. Oh, did that happen to me? Am I doing that to anyone else? See how these triggers take us into very beautiful possibilities in our human story. How we could find out how people cared about us and how we could care about others. Okay, well, did you want to take a... Is this the time when we're taking our break, Judith?
You got to unmute, Judith, and then we'll be able to hear you.
Is it 11 o'clock?
We're about 4 to 11. We've got no more questions for now, so...
All right. It sounds like a good time to take... Or no, are we going right into the breakout rooms now?
Yes, but I want to give the, the topic.
Yes.
So you'll be in groups. Tim, is it groups of 3 or 4?
You're going to be in a group of 3, 2, 4. So you will be randomly assigned by the algorithm of Zoom into a random chat with 3 to 4 people. And some people I can see have 2 people on camera, so you might have an extra there. But it should be a group of 4 or 3, depending on the math. And Dave's going to give us some guiding questions. And what we're going to do, just for the schedule here, is after that 20-minute period from 11 to 11:20, we're going to give you a 5-minute bio stretch break, whatever you need to do. But my recommendation is that when you go for that 5 minutes from 11:20 to 11:25, do not turn do not log out of Zoom, and do not close your computer if you have a laptop or anything like that. Just leave it running so that by 11:25, when you come back, you'll just be right back. And by then, I'll have closed the breakout rooms, and it'll automatically send everybody back into this main room. So
we'll all be back here together at 11:25.
Correct.
And I'll be asking you if there's something that came up in your small group that you would like to share. The topic is very simple. What mostly triggers me, and how do I mostly react? And you want to give everybody a chance and then kind of interact. And, of course, always if what the other person brings up is something that fits for you, say, hey, that happens to me too. Because the more we're validated by one another, the safer and more secure do we feel.
Dave, could you just mention the question one more time, and I'll type that in the chat so that everybody who goes to their breakout room will still be able to see that question in their chat.
What are my most common triggers, or at least one or two, and how do I handle them? How do I react? So what are my main triggers and how do I react to them? I would make that the question. And the break is very short. Just kind of stretch, go to the bathroom, do whatever you have to do, and then come back. And we'll start right away at what time? 11:25. Yeah.
So you'll have about 20 minutes right now to toss those questions, that question around that I just placed in the chat. And you're going to be randomly assigned right now to a group of 3 to 4. And around 11:20, it's up to you all to sort of cease your conversation and take that 5-minute break, and we will be back at 11:25. Remember, leave your computers logged into Zoom and on and open if you have a laptop. And I see a question here from Ingrid about the video. If you have a camera on your laptop or computer or smart device, you should be able to hit the share video button or that video button in the bottom left, and that will turn your video on. If not, you may need to get some tech assistance outside of this this morning. So,
and Tim, could you set up a room for yourself, Judith, and me?
I can do that. So you may get an initial invitation to go to a room and just ignore that until I get that set up.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, friends. Here you go. You're going to probably have to accept the invitation to go to the breakout room. So, here it comes.
Where does it say accept?
It will come up.
Oh, there it is.
So Dave and Judith don't accept.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gee, that works very well.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. So everybody is now in a breakout room?
People are going. So you can see how the pictures are disappearing slowly but surely?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tom just shared that he wants to strangle people who cut him off on the freeway.
I think that's a common trigger.
They probably want to strangle you too.
Well, being a partner of someone who reacts to drivers frequently, I am always saying, just let it go, because he holds on to it. Like as he's driving, he's going, I can't believe that guy did that. So I'm always trying to say, let it go, let it go, let it go. But I'm sure that doesn't help.
I always imagine that perhaps they're rushing to visit somebody in hospital, or their wife's about to have a baby, or their child's at school, and I say, on you go, I wish you well. Please go ahead of me. I wish you well, and I hope you get there safely. That's what I do, because otherwise it's white-knuckling it, and then you end up having an accident yourself because you're so mad. So I always think, oh, I make a story. They're having to get somewhere. Their child's sick. Something's going on. That's what I do.
Very, very advanced of you.
Well, I was looking at, I'm looking at the book here, and the categories of triggers, and the very first one jumped out at me. The heading is feeling self-conscious, and said we are being humiliated or judged as inadequate. And that's a big trigger for me. If I'm engaged, especially from my wife, if I'm like working on a chore or a task or something, and I'm not the handiest person in the world by far, so I'm struggling to do the best I can to fix something, repair something or whatever, and then I get somebody say, what are you doing? I get so upset, and it's, I react with anger typically, or What's the other part? What else would I do? Or I stomp away. but I realize it's because I feel it's like I feel I should be able to do things, you know, and I feel inadequate about it. And I know that stems from I could never do it well enough to please my father. It was at best I'd get begrudging, not even praise, just acknowledgement maybe. Maybe the best he would do is begrudging acknowledgement, and typically critical about, oh, that wasn't good enough, that wasn't done well enough, it wasn't done fast enough. So at age 70, it's like I'm still a 10-year-old boy. Oh my gosh. So one technique that I heard a long time ago and I've tried to employ and I remember all the time is when something like that happens or somebody says something that's hurtful or whatever is to say, ouch. And that does two things, one of which Dave mentioned. So ouch, it lets the other person know that was hurtful. But the other is you build in a pause, ouch, and don't react, and you do that pause that Dave talked about. So that's my biggest trigger.
I think I have to agree, like being criticized, and sometimes I think the reason I react negatively is because I know the person criticizing is right, but I don't want to accept that they're right. I want to defend myself. So a lot of that comes from, I want to defend myself even though I know they're right. And I kind of have figured that out lately. It's taken me a long, long time. But I think that helps to say the pause and then say, well, I think they might be right. I just don't want to accept that. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I certainly, I think I always remember the word disappoint. My mum would say, you've disappointed me, or my dad, I'm disappointed. And somehow that just was just such a big word to disappoint somebody. And I'm the middle child, and my elder sister was really good at everything. And I was very, very shy, introverted, wasn't so good at school. She was brilliant at school. And so always felt, even though it wasn't implicitly said, you're not as good as, but always felt that I wasn't, and that I had to live up to her expectations. And education was so important to my family, and that my sister was just really excelling, and I wasn't at that point. I ended up becoming a teacher. I know it's influenced a lot of what I've done, but that's still that sense of not quite making the grade. Still stays with me, and I get same as you. I get very defensive. Like if I haven't done it right, I want to go into, you know, how dare you? Don't tell me I haven't done it right. You know, and I feel like, yes, I found my voice that I didn't have as a child, but it's not a pleasant voice. On the road to recovery, but I need to turn it into something where it's, you know, powerful and pleasant. Yeah.
I was looking at the different options there, and something that jumped out at me was, if I ever feel like I'm being manipulated or controlled, I am just so opposite, you know, contrary, and Michael can vouch for that. If I feel like my mother was very strong-willed and very directive and controlling, and so anytime I get a feeling that I'm be maneuvered or whatever, I just do the opposite, which is not a good strategy. So trying to think of what's a better option than just doing the opposite.
Control around food. I was at boarding school at age 7, and we had to eat everything on our plate with the nuns. Everything on a plate, and there was a sense that I couldn't have choice. And so still now, if somebody says, you know, eat this, or I've made you this, I have this first sense of, you know, how dare you tell me to eat that, which is awful again, because a sense of, you know, I want to control what I'm eating, not somebody else telling me. So that I know that's a childhood thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how the women feel about food. Food and control can sometimes, there's lots of triggers around that.
I could probably
the men too. Yeah.
Sitting, you're going to finish that and sitting for hours later, stubbornly not eating that.
Starving babies in Africa, you have to eat it because of the starving babies in Africa. Yeah. I haven't read the whole book yet. Have you all read the entire book?
No, we just bought it right a few seconds ago. Well, it seems that David, to me, it seems that he brings out in the Buddhist view, life, worldview often as far as how does this affect me? How does this affect my family? How does this affect everyone? And he often goes to that, how is this affecting everyone? And that's a kind of a Buddhist and Christian, we would hope. Anyone else have any other triggers? I was thinking of the being discounted. In my family, I was the baby. I had two older brothers. It was a very male-oriented house. You know, we hunted and camped and fished, and you had to be ready to go, no fiddling around with your hair or anything. So I, as a little sister, I felt that I, what I had had to say was not that important. And that triggers me when that happens, especially a lot of men. Some friends of ours, the men, typically, especially conservative men, really discount women getting involved in a political discussion or and my mother was a very politically active and spoke her view on things, and so I learned that women do have things to say, and when that's hushed or looked down on, it's really bugs me. And Trump is a trigger. I can't even be in the same room when he's on TV. I just feel sick, so. Help me with that. Anybody have any help for that except not?
Turn off the news.
Turn off the news, husband.
Turn off the TV.
Turn it off. I just go, la, 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 la.
Do you get physical body reactions when you're triggered? Do you actually feel it in your body?
Oh, yeah. I feel sick to my stomach when I see that man speaking. So,
Karen, have you been to Word in Life before, or is this your first experience?
I think one time I went with my cousin Charlene to like a one-day session, and this has to be like 3 to 4 years ago. We come to California in the winter and stay around Pismo Beach area, and I came to Santa Barbara and went to just a 1-2 hour thing, so I'm not really that familiar with, you know, all the programming and everything.
And this is my
she invited me. So, but I live in Pittsburgh, so I'm far away from you guys.
Yeah, you're dressed in your sweater, and we're all.
I'm freezing. It is in the 60s today, but we've had cold and rain, and yeah, our spring is coming very slowly.
Well, one of the reasons I ask you, have you accessed the Word and Life website?
No, I have not.
Okay, so Tom here is our webmaster. So yeah, wordandlife.us.
.us. Okay.
.us, and it's got all kinds of good stuff on there. And as well as previous sessions, because like we said, Tom records them, and so you can listen to past sessions.
Okay. So, thank you for that information.
Okay. Since you're out of state, I thought you might want to know that.
Yes, I wouldn't have known.
I'm local. I'm in Santa Barbara, yes. I moved here about a year and a half ago from Los Angeles, England originally, but yes, Los Angeles for the past 25 years. I was headmistress of a school down there. So he's up here.
And mistress.
Yes.
Very big.
Yeah, like, anybody the headmaster? And I'm like, no, I'm not a headmaster. I'm a headmaster.
Well, good for you. That was so
well, nice. I turned around the education, you see. Turned around the not feeling good enough and made sure that all the little kids in my care did feel good about themselves.
That's not overcompensation, was it?
Yeah, a little bit of overcompensation. Yeah. And I heard about this through one of the art classes I take at the community college. They were talking about this course. So
Christiana?
Pardon?
Was it Christiana?
It's Carissa Lumines is the teacher. Oh, okay. And then there was, I think it's Catherine, who talked about this. And I think she must be part of the organization. So I thought, gosh, I'm being triggered quite a lot lately. And this seems perfect. Seems perfect, and to spend some time exploring that and why. Yeah, which is great. So I was going to say, I'm looking at Tom's record player in the background. That's making me feel very nostalgic. I don't think I've seen a record player for a very long time. I know, it's a great one. Talking about it, triggered by nostalgia. That's great.
Tom's a musician and does playing for hospice and plays music for us and bringing different music and songs that are appropriate to our topics. He's a real musician.
You'll have to come up with a trigger playlist. Playlist, a trigger playlist.
I love that. Oh, that's a great idea. Oh,
let's see, what he's saying. Oh, this is our break now.
Okay. Well, very nice to meet everybody.
Nice to meet everyone.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Time for a break.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So where do we go? How do we go?
You just wait.
I think you can just wait. Yeah, oh, wait. It'll kick off. That's okay. I think it's a good idea.
Thank you for your permission.